Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty to welcome in a comedian, musician, all-around creative, a man you might find singing to birds or exploring the Galapagos Islands, Mr. Joe Soule.
Hey.
Joe, welcome, my friend.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Dude, I'm super stoked to have you here. It's a long time coming in a roundabout unknown way.
Yeah.
My first time ever on anything was on the 1-800-FunkSauce.com. The deleted song.
Yeah, that was a hugely popular show that I did.
Hugely.
Yeah, I think 20 or 30 people have seen that.
Yeah, at least. I mean, tens of tens.
Today. Yeah, we'll get
so
there.
I know you as a wildly creative individual from basically my whole time in Sarasota. So I want you to kind of take me back to when you start to realize you've got ideas brewing in your head and you want to make them come to life wherever you're at.
Yeah, I was thinking about that earlier when I was getting out of the shower. I did shower for this. And
appreciate that.
Yeah, I needed to bad. But I just have ideas all the time. And I have, you know, it's like, oh, I don't know. I don't know. It's like, is this a musical thought or is this comedy or is this just like, do I need to talk to someone about this? And I just have ideas all the time, and I'd really just try my best to get things sorted out properly. I think that's like 99% of what I do with my brain now is just make sure the ideas go to the right places.
Do you remember when were you like a little kid that couldn't stop building things or like couldn't stop drawing things, or was it always just like this torrent of ideas?
Yeah, I mean, I came out questioning like what just happened, you know? I'm pretty sure I've been through this whole thing before, like hundreds of times.
Yeah.
I've been telling people I'm like 30,000 years old at least, you know? And I really did come out swinging in terms of like questions and answers to questions that people didn't have, stuff like that.
Do you remember that stuff?
When I was younger?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was, by the time I knew how to speak, I was asking people like where I came from and why I was born and like what I was like before I was born and stuff like that. And people were like, please relax. Like, yeah, there's a long way to go with this whole thing and nobody knows any of this stuff. It's like, all right, I'm going to kind of keep asking. But yeah, I remember when I was like a really little kid, I went to draw Santa. But it's like boring just to draw regular Santa. So I drew all of his Santa, like an autopsy of Santa, you know, with all of his guts, where I thought the guts go in a person. And of course I was wrong because I was a kid.
Well, Santa's guts are a little bit anomalous.
It's magic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you might have had it right and not known it.
True.
That might have been another one of
those
things.
A little forgiving Santa's. Yeah. There's stuff everywhere in there.
There's room. And how old were you when you did that?
Six or seven.
So it was just a matter of your instinct was just drawing the Santa everybody else sees is boring.
It's like, what am I supposed to do with all this time? And like my hands, you know, like what am I supposed to do all the time? And usually it's like, I want to make stuff and like, you know, the world is infinite fire hydrants, and I'm a dog with an infinitely full bladder. I'm going after it that way.
Yeah, well, that's... Okay, so when did you identify that feeling?
I'm not sure. I think that it's just been there. Yeah, I've just been getting after it since as long as I can remember, which is all the way back, you know?
So would you look at your propensity to create as compulsive?
Yeah, I don't think I can, like, I don't do good not. Like, if I try really hard, I'm like, all right, you know, this whole week, I'm not going to make anything or do any challenging ideas or anything like that. I won't make it. Yeah.
Yeah, I can somewhat relate to that too. So given that that's the case, and I suppose that probably falls into the camp of it doesn't dawn on you one day, it's more a matter of the way things always were and you start to come into your own skin. How was school for you?
Oh, school was pretty horrible. Like, it was just jail for kids, right? It's just babysit. It's this government-sponsored babysitting for young adults, and it's school is really tough. I enjoyed, like, you know, being disruptive, scheming, you know, doing jokes. You know, and none of the, like, you know, the lesson. I got great grades and stuff, but I was just like, all right, give me the test and let me take it, and then let me do the other stuff now.
Right.
Yeah.
So did you feel like that sort of existing outside the fray in that scenario where it was just like, okay, I'll jump through your hoop, but this is not working for me?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it, right? There's like society and the way that society is. And I didn't do it. I didn't build. I didn't start the fire, as they say.
Yeah.
You know? And so I sort of like do my best to just live inside of the machine, but also exist as a person, because I don't believe that the machine is necessarily made to make everyone like happy and fulfilled, especially as a like creative person. There's not a lot in there in terms of that. You really kind of have to do your own thing. I don't remember what I was saying, but it was really good.
Well, that is part of it. I guess you have to recognize at some point that if the creative juice is what you want, you know, you're going to have to define whether or not it's worth the squeeze.
Mm-hmm.
How old were you when you came to Florida? Because you grew up in Wisconsin, right?
Yeah, I was like 10, right after Y2K. We got out of there.
How much of Wisconsin was an influence on you? Did you feel like the doldrums of that? Just out of disclosure, that's where I grew up too.
Yeah, I mean, there was nothing to do, and when I wasn't like a sports kid, so that's kind of what there was to do. It was like, you want to go play baseball? No. You want to go ride a what do they do?
Dirt bikes
skis on snow?
Oh, snowmobiles. Yeah.
No. So I was indoors doing a lot of like Legos and building and just thinking about stuff and putting stuff together. We got a computer really early. I really got into the, you know, we were like 5, we got a computer, and I stayed in the computer since then.
Yeah. Well, let's mission drift a little bit. Talk to me a little bit about that, because that is one thing that your creative prowess probably has, in spades matching it, is your technological prowess.
Interlinked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about that. I didn't realize that was something that came up kind of together.
Well, to be real specific, I was playing with Legos a lot, and then we got a computer, and there was this, like, I've never played Minecraft, but I think it's similar-ish, like, there was a Lego game, so it was like, oh, I had infinite pieces, and I didn't have to dig anymore through a box to find the thing that I needed to execute my vision, so it was, like, completely unlocked, and I got really into that, and then I got into, like, okay, if instead of using bricks to build all this stuff, if I use dynamite, Lego dynamite, like I can crash this computer reliably. And that was a thrill for me, which, you know, is basically sort of what I do professionally now, is I break stuff and try to break stuff. I think of what I look at a beautiful world that somebody has made, and I think about, all right, I could break this, you know, and that's sort of what I've been doing too with the reality that we all live in.
So is it just a matter, do you think, that your professional nature, if you see things how they're set to be and breaking them, is really just it's just a byproduct of you being able to see things from a different perspective than the person that created it?
Well, yeah, and I certainly don't see like perfection anywhere that I look, you know? I don't feel perfect either, but, you know, there's always, like, you know, try stuff out, change stuff up. Isn't that what nature's been doing, like, the whole time? So I'm just sort of, like, I'm trying to go with the flow. And it seems like that is the flow of, like, you know, they got, like, trees that grow around big rocks.
That or the rock that sits in the water and the water goes around it,
that
the Bruce Lee
stuff
thing.
Like that.
Yeah. So, but doesn't it, I don't know. I guess talk to me about the impetus, because this is it's kind of both sides of the same coin in that you get all the Lego pieces and you have the infinite chance to build, but then you have to have to hit some kind of moment that, what does this mean? What does infinite building mean? Mm-hmm. Well, infinite building, I guess, begs the question of, I guess, what's infinite destruction or what's the end of it? What's the thought that goes on in your head that it's like, okay, I want to see how far I can take this the other direction? I mean, were you just sitting there thinking, like, did you just blow up one dynamite and was like, hey, what if I do 10,000?
I did a bunch one time, and it wasn't the sound of an explosion anymore. It was the sound of like an explosion inside a dying computer type thing. And I was like, that sounds really cool. I'm really sensitive to sound. And so once I got it to do something that I felt like it wasn't designed or meant to do, but it was still very cool. So I was like, oh, let me lean into this. Because, yeah, I don't know if you've ever had a guitar pedal where like you can get real intimate with the knob and have it like between settings and it starts doing wacky stuff. Like, yeah, give me that stuff. I want that stuff.
And how old were you when that happened? When the Lego dynamite literally went off?
Oh, less than 10, probably 8.
So still in Wisconsin.
Yeah. So and then I moved here and I was a full on alien, you know, because, you know, you get moved as a kid depending on the age and it's like, oh, these aren't my friends.
Right. That's what I was just going to ask. So what was it like being dropped here then?
Well, when I first arrived, I hated the state and everyone in it.
And did it seem like 10,000 degrees?
Oh, yeah, it still does.
Yeah.
Disgusting. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was the culture shock of it like?
I think that, like, people seemed at least somewhat intelligent in Wisconsin. I don't want to insult everyone in Florida. I do want to. I think that Florida is full of stupid.
It's certainly got a reputation for that, or at least full of something.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of dummies here.
But
we're having a nice time.
Yeah, and one of the things that's kind of cool about this little area of Florida is it does have some underlying love for the arts.
Oh, yeah. Sarasota, particularly really cool. There's like...
Especially like 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, at least last I checked, there was like a soul here. And I think, you know, St. Pete to some extent also has like, you know, like a soul. And there's at least a undercurrent of desire to be doing cool stuff in a organic way.
Yeah, what do you see that as? The people that want to still make art and still kind of what looks like to everybody else piss in the wind.
Yeah, well,
maybe for you personally,
people got to figure out what to do with all their time and energy and thoughts and emotion. I'm happy that, you know, a lot of these guys that go to like the stand-up comedy, like the open mics, I'm glad they have that, because it's like if they don't have this outlet, or like the bands can't play at the bars, you know, they're gonna hurt people. They're gonna go out and hurt people like everyone else has been doing. So it's good. Hold on to that guitar, you know. Do the jokes over, you know, the you know, shootings and stuff.
Yeah,
you know, we don't like that.
Right? We frown on that.
Yeah, are some of these bands bad? Oh yeah, they're not good. But would they be worse if they went and shot up a mall? Yeah.
So I guess that begs the question, what do you think is the like intrinsic nature of creativity being a healthy thing for people?
You got to let it out. You got to let it go, you know, there's like you can generate feelings and thoughts and energy inside yourself, and if you contain it all, I think it turns into like cancer and violence and toxicity and stuff like that. So the more that you can, like, obviously you want to have a diverse, rich set of inputs into your senses, and you want to have a complex and vast inner world. But as stuff gets sort of built up in this inner world, like, it's got to go somewhere. I think it ought to go somewhere. It's a sandbox up there, not a city that people are meant to live in for 1,000 years. It's a sandbox that every day you wake up, you know, the Zen garden.
Right.
It's a the wind blows through that at night.
Do you think that there's something fundamental about the way we're living now that's discouraging people from seeing it as the sandbox it is?
The, like, grind, hustle stuff?
Yeah.
Everyone's locked into, like, making their lives better and stuff, but they don't necessarily have a grip on what better is truly meant to be.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's
like
a lot.
I want a nicer car. It's like, what, you know? Your car is not going to, like, I drove my car here and I didn't get, like, I don't feel aroused by my car. I'm never going to get in there and be like,
car.
Like, it's going to get me. It got me from home to here, you know.
Mission accomplished.
But I don't think, like, man, if this car was worth, like, more money than I could, like, I'd be, like, perked up driving this thing.
Maybe that's the 30,000 years. Maybe you learned that one and brought it with you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a lot. I think I swear I was so close last time. I don't know exactly what happened, but got sucked right back in. We're back in it.
Yeah. We've had a couple of guests on the show that have some really enlightening ideas about that.
Certainly not the first time around.
No.
I've met people like that. It's their first time, and it's, like, cool.
Yeah, I remember when I was a little kid, I remember, like, 6-7 times saying that. They'd ask me what I wanted to be or what I was going to do, and I said, I don't know, but I feel like I've been here before, and you succeed when you can remember the life you had before this one. I was just a kid and didn't know what I was talking about, but I've had those kind of feelings, too. But take me back to, like, you're in Florida now. When do you start, like, being creative here? When do you start plugging yourself in here and start doing things here? Because you don't remain underground alien for all that long.
Yeah, I started, I think, like, pretty much after high school. I was a big attention-craving type person, and I still am. I was in high school a lot, in terms of, like, I made a lot of my own, like, t-shirts and stuff. I'd just write something on a white t-shirt and Sharpie that would, like, shock people if they read it and walked by. And then...
Do you remember any of them?
Yeah, there was one, like, the front said horses and the back just said glue. I had a shirt that I had written, and this was, I think, before some of the stuff, so don't cancel me, but I had a shirt that said Happy Birthday Mel Gibson on it, and I'd wear that, like, once a week and just get people to believe that on that day it was. And people don't, like, dig, really, like, so they just see that and it's like they're gonna go tell everyone that it's Mel Gibson's birthday that day.
So I guess then that begs the question, when do you find that you get a charge out of taking the piss out of people via their own ignorance or inability
right away,
to?
Always.
Always?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's pretty much been there. I don't know. Maybe I'm a demon and not a person. I think about that sometimes at night.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Where are you at with that one?
I'm pretty sure I'm a demon and not a person. But... I think I pass well enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that is part of the trick to being a good demon.
I think you're right.
Yeah. If you can't pass, then
yeah,
you're not gonna be able to.
I think
to
some people sniff it out right away. Like some people like walk down the street and like look at me and they're like, oh, no way. And I respect that a lot. I do that to people too.
They might be just more refined demons.
Like a higher powered wizard. I'm always afraid of that. Like as someone into wizardry, and I honestly I wish there was more of it. You know, I think you become a better wizard every time you run into a higher powered wizard, you know, as long as that wizard doesn't destroy you, and maybe that's what you deserve. I don't know.
Yeah, right. Well, it's going to happen to somebody.
Eventually. Once you get into super high-powered wizardry, it's a lot of destruction.
Yeah, invariably.
Yeah.
There can only be one Highlander from what I knew.
That's right. There can be only one.
Yeah. So when you realize you're starting to get this charge out of taking the piss out of people, you've got this creative power, you got the intellect, you got the technological skills that are starting to develop, what's the first thing you kind of birth out creatively where you're feeling like you're stepping into one of your ideas more than just a flash moment?
I started playing shows starting in senior year in high school. I played my first ever like stage show as a musical act.
By yourself?
Yeah. But there was that day there happened to be someone playing the drums, but it was poorly planned and they were just kind of there and we did it that way. But yeah, it was always just like me in my bedroom. I was, once I started like putting the pieces together of the music machine, I would just go nuts in my bedroom. Like I would just let it rip for like 4 or 5 hours and be like, all right, that ruled. And then eventually it was like, I should start doing this on the stage.
And what did that consist of at this point? You got a drum machine, you're using the computer. What's square one for your musical journey?
There was no computer yet. It started as all pedals outside of the computer. And then I was doing like, I would record things in the computer, but they were completely separate worlds for a long time. And so it was like a looper pedal and, you know, maybe a drum machine and like a synthesizer and a whole bunch. There's always been a whole bunch of guitar pedals. And then, you know, I had the Spider amp that I could like, the Spider amp, you could really do the Spider 2, put the knob between the like cassette and it got wacky.
Yeah. Where Digital Neverland was.
Yeah. Yeah. It got wacky. And I did shows like that for a while, and then eventually that turned into, I got really into Ableton. A couple years into that, I got really into Ableton, and the rig turned into just a bunch of Ableton controllers for a little while. And then, like, I don't know. I work on the computer. I have a relationship with computers that I don't want to do stuff with a computer, like, in front of people. So I don't want a computer to be part of my required equipment to, you know. So I got back away from Ableton. I put a rig back together again with loopers since. And I've kind of gone back and forth a few times. Nowadays, it's like I'm in and out of the box constantly. I'll have a thought. I'll be sitting at the computer, I'll do something, I'll bounce it over to a looper or the like OP1 or something or some other sampler and I'll start playing with something in another room away from the computer, but still I'm very much in just some piece of gear.
Right.
Finding the cool sounds.
But when you started making music, I don't want to go too fast over that part because when you started making music, you started making a lot of music right away, didn't you?
Yeah.
So talk to me about your process of making music, because you've, it's hard to gloss over this because you've made everything from, you know, your performances for the Songs for Birds to, you know, full on electronic pieces that are concept albums. Kind of talk to me a little bit about how making music works for you.
Yeah, I do it. And I'm usually just sort of doing it the way that you would like. I can't say that. I just sort of do it. It's like a byproduct of having a day. Like some music play ends up happening. Whether I'm recording it or building on an idea, I'm not sure, but I'm playing. I'm playing with myself every day with music. And so I play and then like, I don't know. I don't have a plan until I do. So like I just put out a record on Easter that I started working on in August and I didn't know. I was just like, oh, this is cool. I'm making a song today. And then a few days later, I make a song. And then a few months later, it's like, boy, I've made so many songs that I really should like tie a bow around this and kick it out my front door so I can do something else now.
Is that a lot the feeling, like you just got to clear off your workspace every so often and that invariably makes it so you're constantly putting things out?
Yeah, and I really like to finish. Like I said, a few moments ago, I'm playing with myself every day. I really like to finish.
Yeah. Well, that's an important part of it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, why start?
That's right. I really like to finish. And like I said, tying a bow around things is really important to me just because, like, I know that as, like, I have perfectionist, like, tendencies kind of, but I can resist them.
What's that like?
And say, this is done.
How does that work?
Because I would like to, every time I make something and put my name on something, I would like for it to be the best thing any person's ever done. And it never has been. But also, I know that, like, I could be still working on something, some song from 2012, and today, if I was still working on that, it would still not be the best thing anyone's ever done. It's an unrealistic goal, I think.
So it's just a matter of having a lofty goal, but knowing that you don't have to hit it?
Yeah, and, like, having deadlines, too. I used to do that, have deadlines a lot. I'd be sitting around in January and say, you know, in March, I really want to put out something. A lot of time, it was just my emotions. I was just going through my life as a sensitive, emotional, tender young man, and I would feel things, and people would cause me to feel things, and then I'd go cry about it into my guitar or synthesizer or whatever for a couple hours, and then after, you know, a month of doing that, it's like, hey, this is an hour of music.
So was Rafe the first, like, project you had that you were doing that with?
Yeah. And
how many, I mean, can you even quantify it in albums? How many hours worth of music did you put out under that moniker?
Oh, I'm not sure. Probably 8 or something. I think, I've lost track recently. I put that record out last week, and I usually do, like, a count when I do that of, like, where I'm at now, and I kind of stopped doing that. I don't know what's out there. It's a lot.
Yeah, because you've had a couple different projects along the way.
Yeah, the names keep changing and stuff, which is like, boy, that makes it easy for everyone.
Right.
Yeah.
So talk to me about the evolution of that. Like, what was the hip-hop character you had, the XY489 or something like that?
489XY. I was a rapper from the future for, I don't know, 6 months, and then I was rapping, then one day I was like, wouldn't it be cool if instead of 489XY, I was YX984? And I tried to make, like, it was like rap, and it was from the future, and it was like the vocal was like really pitched down.
Yeah.
And I had sampled a whole bunch of, like, other people's music. I was like, wouldn't it be cool if I only sampled my music and made it, like, happy? And so I had, like, I tried to make, like, a sister project to that. You know, that was just like trying to be the opposite of what I just was. And I made a record like that. Yeah.
So when you're having these ideas, I guess this is kind of the operative thing for people that maybe have creativity that they don't exercise, or maybe creativity that they don't recognize. What are you thinking to yourself? What's it like when you're having this idea? I got this idea for this rapper from the future with laser beam shoulder pads and all this, and where you go from thinking that to doing that.
Oh. Oh, yeah. If I have an idea that I think that is good, that I don't think, I have a lot of ideas, and some of them, often I can have an idea and it's good enough and sort of like normal enough that I can count on somebody else to do it.
Mm.
You know, if I'm like, yeah, I should like start a pop punk band, and like the front man is like a beautiful woman, you know, like, someone's going to do that.
Yeah.
If I don't do that,
someone will
do it. So that's not my work. But if I had an idea the other day to, I don't know how far I can get into this, but I've always wanted to make a synthesizer sound like a wet person. And I was like, why don't I sample this? I don't know. I should be sampling instead of synthesizing this. And it's so far out there of like, how am I going to even get the people on board? Right. But it's like the idea is so wild that like I'm pretty sure like people might dabble with it, but nobody's going to take something like that over an imaginary finishing line and put it on Spotify. I want wet people on Spotify, and I'm pretty sure like I don't have a lot of confidence that someone else is going to take that and run with it.
You can dominate that lane.
So like, yeah, I think that's kind of what a big part of what is happening next is I have to do the arduous, painstaking process of putting microphones near some wet people.
Right. Well, it's all that.
Someone's got to do the hard work.
Though. It's in the name of art, though.
Yeah, someone's got to do the hard work. And, you know, if an idea generates a bunch of easy work, then it's like, yeah, someone will just do that. I don't have to.
Have you always felt that way, or did you have to learn that by doing something that The Simpsons did it?
I usually know when I have an idea that's like, oh, someone's gonna parallel their way to this pretty easily. You know, if it's at the bottom of the ideas tree, you know. And it's like, yeah, someone's going to just walk by and grab this. Like, I want to have to build a ladder to get to the top of the ideas tree, or I'm not really doing the work in ideas land.
Valuable. So when you're starting to launch a little bit of your music out into the world, you graduate in high school, this begs the, how does one keep their creative self alive? Is this where you parlay your technology and your desire to destroy things into day job life?
Oh, yeah. So I have lived I don't want to say double life because I really only have one. But I've been successful in like as a like corporate ghoul in the like career space with like computer type stuff in a way that allows me to have my time and energy outside of that to sort of pursue what fulfills me as a person. So I figured out how to stay alive, which was arguably pretty important. And then I just started carving out space within that to, like, feel alive and want to be alive.
So I guess that takes it back to you see it as, what do we do with our time? And you wanted to have more time to do with.
Yeah, because by the time I figured out how to survive and have my time to myself, I had figured out, like, I'm not sure if anyone is as good at amusing themselves as I am, because that's what I'm doing first and foremost all the time. Like, does my work find audiences? Yeah, I guess sometimes. Do I like care a ton about that? Often not. Often I am amusing myself first, and at the end of this rodeo with all the wet people, it'll be like, oh, well, that was cool. And then I'll be on to the next thing. I'm not going to spend a year trying to, like, build some sort of business around
the wet people.
Yeah, or anything. I want to make stuff, like, purely make stuff. And I know that there's, like, a lot of, I see and hear a lot of stuff of, like, oh, you got to turn yourself into a business or you're insignificant and don't matter. And it's like, eh.
Why do you think people feel that way?
Well, people want to be, like, I think, like, rich and successful and, like, listened to. And, like, yeah, I mean, it'd be cool to have an audience. If my audience finds me, great. But I'm not going to go and get on my knees and to, like, go find them necessarily. Like, the record I put out last week, it's 311 minutes long. It's not made for the casual... maybe I'll check this out type listener. That's a day of your life. That's a day of your life if you want to listen to that, basically.
And so when you do stuff like that, I guess it's amusing yourself, yeah, but is it also like some part of you that has to be challenged by the idea or you can't pursue it?
Yeah, I don't want to do the same thing twice. I don't want to do the same thing again. It's like, I'm trying to keep things polite, but if you ever maybe went on the internet and saw a video of like a really beautiful woman and you just enjoyed that, like, are you going to wake up the next day and be like, you know what I want to watch again? Or like, no, there's 8 billion people, like 8 billion people, 100 trillion videos. Like, do something different today. Then, like, that's how you grow and learn and have, like, a life that's a beautiful patchwork quilt of experiences that are diverse and changed and not, like, I can't, like, when I listen to other people's music, I love music and I, like, but what I really like is a transformation. A transformation gets me going. Radiohead, great example. From the Bends to OK Computer to Amnesiac or Kid A or whatever, like, whoa.
Yeah.
Keep transforming, guys. That's awesome. Bon Iver put out that self-titled record. It was very guitar Wisconsin majesty. And then
right.
The next one was, whoa, somebody got a computer or something. And it, like, big, big transformation. I really love a big transformation. And if I'm not transforming, I'm probably a little bit bored. And if I'm not totally excited about something, I'm flat out not doing it. So, yeah.
What do you think that does for you in the rest of your life, being that you have been able to do the things that you're totally excited about when you want to do it? I mean, that's a feat unto itself, in large part for most people's vision of what they're doing with their time.
Yeah. It's cool to do stuff. I do stuff, and then sometimes people are like, I want to do stuff like that. And it's like, you totally can. I tell people all the time, like, you definitely can, you know? But you have to, like, want to more than something else, maybe.
Well,
I don't have a horse farm. I don't have time. I can't have horses. I have synthesizers.
Right, and then you're invariably going to have some type of glue problem.
Yeah.
You know? As the shirt told me.
Well, I think they make glue out of horses.
I think so. At least partly.
It serves them right.
And gelatin.
Do you got horse people that are fans of the podcast?
Possibly.
Well, you're wasting your life on those things, guys.
They know. It's the dreaded reality that your love turns into paste or gelatin.
They get really locked in.
Yeah, well, it's a commitment.
Yeah,
well,
I respect it, but not me.
Well, that's the grind. That's the grind. You got to make your horse time.
Yeah, I mean, I shovel horse manure, but it isn't horse manure. It's weird sounds in my head and my computer.
Right,
it's the same stuff, though.
Yeah, yeah. I guess I guess ultimately it is that exercise of how you decide what you're doing with your time. Well, one of your endeavors, I do actually a lot of them. I would like to ask about specifically, but two of them, one I want to ask specifically about, was when you decided to do your songs, the performances for the birds, and singing out in literally for no one, just film yourself. Mm-hmm. Talk to me, kind of walk me through that one as a for instance of you have this idea that you can be fully excited about and then do it.
Yeah, I had sort of walked away from the computer for a little bit and wanted to just, like, and I've done this a few times, just be like, hey, let me pull out the acoustic guitar and make a racket this way and, like, really flesh out some songs before there's any technology involved at all. And I got there, and I got to where I was, like, playing a set of, like, folksy acoustic type songs, and I was doing a lot of recording. I was trying to, like, record stuff outside, and I kept hearing, like, cars. And so I'd, like, go to a park, you know, and I'd, like, hear cars, road noise and stuff, and the mics, and I was like, I want to hear ants walking, you know, and not cars. And so I was like, I want to go out into the woods and basically just do, like, you know, Pink Floyd at Pompeii, but in the woods, and there's, like, yeah, there's an audience, it's just not people, and people can watch me later do this show for these whatever birds are out here in these trees.
And how long of a performance? You played for quite a while. That was a set worth or more, right?
Yeah, I think that I made, like, a concert film out of it. Yeah, I'm so bad at making stuff brief for people. I think it was like 3 hours long or something like that.
Yeah. Well, brief isn't, you know, always necessary, I guess.
People can always just watch the first bit. If people don't have time, I encourage them to do their own editing. You know, I'm not going to leave stuff on the cutting room floor in the digital toilet era. Like, why? Like, put it in there. You know, I put it out.
Either one.
Unless it's bad. And sometimes if it's bad, I'll put it out still.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Purposely? In spite of that?
Yeah, you're supposed to, I think. Because I've made things that I thought were bad, and then people are like, that rules. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, if you like it, great. You know, and so it's not for me, but, you know, I spent the time making the thing, at least put, like, I don't have any, like, embarrassment or, like, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I'll make more bad things later. You know, you can be the greatest guitar player in the world one day, and everyone knows that and says that, and then the next day, you can put out something bad. And that's more exciting and interesting than somebody who says, all right, I made it to the top of this mountain. Everyone thinks I'm the best, so I can just chill now.
Yeah, well, that's that's some of the homogenizing, the flattening of culture when that happens.
Yeah.
Do you consciously see some of the things that you create and do as pushing against the flattening of culture? Or is it just more like you said, it's just who you are, who you've always been, it's compulsory, and this is just your contribution to the 8 billion of us?
I definitely like to, like, I'm not sure. Like, I think that if there was people that were making the stuff that I would make and do make, then I wouldn't necessarily feel as much like I have to, you know? If somebody was recording Wet People and they had my confidence, then maybe I could go and, like, I don't know, I could learn basket weaving this summer instead, you know? But I don't feel like that's the case.
No?
No, and also a lot of people do basket weaving, so, like, I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of basket weaving companies. They've been doing it for a while.
Yeah, and there's a lot of just like, yeah, if people want a 15-second clip of a 3-minute song that will perfectly sell an automobile, there's so much of that. Guys, like, go have at it. I'm not doing that for you, though.
Yeah. Yeah, there is plenty of that. Well, and that makes me curious a little bit how you look at when you have to present your art or when you put it out there. Like, are you done with it once it's made? Because otherwise you kind of get into the point where you're kind of making car commercials for your own shit, or you end up feeling that way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't sell really at all. I do, like, a little bit. It's kind of a joke. Yeah. Like, I had AI write me some, like, a press release for the record I put out last week. And then I just kept making it make it worse. And then I put that into, like, a video with a bunch of disjointed media. And I said, this will be good.
But that's almost the same exercise as having made the art in the first place. This is just the coda of it, so to speak. Yeah,
I had fun. Yeah.
So now that if you're not all that concerned with where it lands or how it lands, do you ever think to yourself, like, about the whole attention span thing that we're working against now when you're making stuff that so long? Do you ever think to yourself, if I can't make this some type of digestible pellet, it's not going to get anywhere? Or you just simply don't care at all?
Yeah, I mostly don't care. Like, it would be cool if there was, like, people looking for the things that I'm doing. But I'm almost sure that I would abuse that, too. So, like, if I woke up tomorrow and there was a million people following me saying, hey, what's next? We like that stuff that you did.
It would be Lego Dynamite time?
Yeah. Yeah, something like that. Exactly. It'd be like, oh, you like this? Let me make the opposite of that now so that you hate me, so that I can see if I can make you hate me as well.
We'll see what kind of noise that makes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then I guess we're sort of getting yourself to the timeline where you just got creative endeavors blowing up all over the place. And I like to say that I don't have any problem with creative outlets, except I keep creating them. So yeah. Take me to the point where you create the creative outlet of starting to do comedy. How does that one? Because that's your current biggest focus artistically. Yeah,
I think so. Out of the house. I mean, I make music every day. I play with myself every day. I'm going to keep saying that.
Well, it's important. I think that the viewers need to recognize that is a daily thing.
Yes. Yeah, often at night, but not always. But I do. I play music every day. I can play so much music later today. So much stuff, though. So much stuff. Like, if I want to go and play music for people out in the world, I need a truck. I need a whole bunch of speakers. I need a whole bunch of lasers, synthesizers. It's a circus that I have to transport and then build somewhere else. And then hope that people go, which, by the way, you have to do a lot of selling and promotion and marketing, et cetera. You have to really get in the bosom of the machine to have any prayer of living, breathing human beings showing up to seeing your particular circus. Mine happens to be immensely complicated, expensive, and difficult to move around. So it's like, that's like a lot of effort for like often no joy. And comedy, I just get to go place. I could do comedy right over there right now. There's a guy over there. I could go try to make him laugh. I don't even need to pull anything out of my pocket.
So was like the simplicity of it all a temptation?
Yeah, and I dabbled a little bit with, like, I made a musical comedy movie in 2020 that I had a lot of fun doing, and I tried to, like, be funny with it, and we talked that the animated podcast show thing, I was trying to be funny with it, you know, but it wasn't, like, on stage.
Yeah.
And I think I realized, like, oh, I don't have, people talk about, like, the fear, there's a fear associated with, like, public speaking and stand-up comedy and like being on stage, and the more I hear about that, the more it's like, oh, I should probably be up there because I don't have any of that.
Yes.
Just the idea that like Friday I can get off work and like just go, I get in a car and go do comedy and show up and do it, and I don't need a set list or MIDI programs or DMX cables or any of the stuff. I can just show up. And I get, like, you know, trying to make a bunch of people dance, kind of hard. Like, you need all that stuff. You have to have lasers. And if you say, oh, do it without lasers, to hell with you. We need them. Whereas, you know, comedy.
You don't with or without a laser.
You don't need any of the stuff. And you get the reaction right away. It's instant. Whereas, like, sometimes with all the lasers and the speakers going on, I don't have the best grasp of, like, are people enjoying themselves right now? It's very much just, like, I'm expressing myself as hard as I can in this moment, to the point where I will have nothing left to give by the time the clock runs out on my stage time. That's all I'm doing. I'm giving as much of myself as I can through this technological and musical filter that I've built. And by the end of it, I'm meant to be empty and all of me is gone, right? Like the Zen garden, back to zero.
Right.
So it's like building a sandcastle in that garden, driving that sandcastle down the street in front of people and then blowing it in their faces, right? Whereas with comedy, you get instant. I could think of something, and I do it all the time, think of something on my way to the show that I think might be funny to say to the people. And I'll say it to them, and I know pretty much right away if that group of people thought that was funny or not.
So do you, when you first started going to perform comedy, were you writing like specifically ahead of time, or were you just writing premises and kind of off the cuff in it a little bit?
I've been writing notes of my, so I have a lot of ideas.
Right.
And I've written most of my ideas down since I was like, at least since I had an iPhone. Right. Like If I write something in a journal, I might as well not be writing it down at all. I lose papers. But if I write it down on my phone, it's there. If I have an idea and then I forget about it and then I have the same idea again a little while later, that's a good one. That one's begging, you know, knocking at the door. I don't think I've answered your question.
So when you have those ideas, how did you start turning them into comedy? Were you just going to open mics and just riffing, or were you writing?
Yeah. I write the jokes out. I'll write the jokes out, like, in full, and then I reduce that to just the points.
And that's how you started doing it?
And then I would go on stage, and I'd say, all right, well, I have 5 minutes. I want to see how many of the points I can get through in 5 minutes, and then... I get a sense of like how much I can do and how much amount of time, but I keep writing. I write. That's my joy is like, do I like going out and making the people laugh? Yeah, it's fine, but I really do like writing. And so like, you know, a lot and something I'm trying to do. I like to break worlds, right? And in the music world, there's like, I don't know, like. I mentioned Radiohead, then there's like Phish, right? They're a jam band. Like you don't really know. You kind of know what to expect, but not really, right? Whereas like if you see Green Day two nights back to back, exactly the same. Exactly note for note, step by step, it's a machine running, right? And not knocking them. Love Green Day. But comedy. A lot of these guys, and I'm not knocking them, but they'll do the same. They'll have 10 minutes of jokes, and for a year or more, if they're going on stage,
they're working that 10 minutes.
They're doing those 10 minutes of jokes. And I'm like, if I do a 10 minutes of jokes on Friday, I really got to twist my own arm to do the same 10 even the next day on the Saturday, because it's like, it feels icky a little. And people say, oh, well, you'll never succeed writing so much and changing so much. And you have to really get good, really good at the same, like, exact, like, what about jazz? What about, like, being able to, like, have a moment? And I think a lot of people are doing well now just doing pure crowd work. You have guys that are succeeding. They're barely writing jokes at all. They have pieces of things that they can put together on the spot for, like, they know a recipe for an omelet if somebody hands them an egg.
Right.
But, like, yeah.
Yeah, the crowd work got to be a certainly a bigger thing now,
it's
for sure.
There's very different camps. I think that the people who are doing the best and the most interesting comedy shows now are blending those things a little.
What were some of your comedy influences, or did you just start pulling this straight from the ether of your torrent of ideas?
People have always just laughed at the things that I've said, because I like say outlandish stuff all the time. And so eventually I just was like, oh, maybe like if I just said, if I just share my inner world with people, they laugh. And so it's like, all right, well, I'll share more of my inner world with people and try just hide it even less and just be even more transparent about how deranged my inner world is.
Did that bring on a moment of irony, or was it more just like, oh, hell yeah?
Yeah, it was empowering, because it's like, oh, all I have to do is like talk for a little while, and inevitably I'll land on something that is unexpected from a rational, non-deranged person.
they make the best subjects.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first time that happened? Do you remember the first joke that you landed on people and it was like, what the fuck? And you got that laugh?
I don't think so. No. Not really. When I was a little kid, I was talking about Santa to a group of like high schoolers. I think there was like a group of high schoolers around the house for whatever reason, maybe like my brother's friends. And I figured out like if I started to talk about Santa's sack, they would laugh.
So it's just off to the races from there.
I talked about Santa's sack all night, you know, stuff like that. And I didn't realize until later what's so funny about Santa's sack.
But it was working, so go with it.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the impetus for you to start doing comedy, though? Was it solely just a matter of another creative outlet, just you couldn't not give some time a day?
Yeah. And it was like, I don't know, I go to a lot of comedy, so usually after I'm exposed to something enough, I'm arrogant enough to be like, I should do that too. You know? Like, I bet if I went and had spaghetti every night for the next 30 nights, one of those nights I'm going to come home and be like, I should make spaghetti. You know? I have seen that in comedy too. Like, I've bought tickets for the early show and the late show because I really liked a comedian. And then the early show is funny and the late show is exactly the same. And it's like, oh, this is not that magical. This is not that magical. Like, this is like, comedy's easy. If you can make people laugh, comedy's so easy. The hard part, as with any other thing, just like music, the hard part is being on the stage in the room where there's people in the seats that are there for you to be on the stage. Right?
Yeah.
Telling jokes and making people laugh, it's easy. Doing it to an empty room, it's hard. Getting people to go out and turn off Netflix and come hear you talk about how you feel about their genitalia, et cetera, hard. They prefer to often stay home and watch Netflix or make a smoothie or have a superfood of some kind.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's healthy.
I had chia seeds the other day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Multiple?
Yeah, a whole packet full. I go to Walgreens. If you get the chia pets, you know, just pull out the seed packet and eat it.
Dang.
Yeah.
Does that affect
it's
your
a
hair
super
too, though?
Food.
Yeah. That's like that secret.
Probably does.
That might be like the minoxidil cousin they don't talk
it's
about.
It's crazy. Remember kale used to be like the Pizza Hut buffet? They just used it as like parchment, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
It was decorative, and now everyone eats kale. So chia seeds, it used to be like we were just spreading these things on the face of Weird Al Yankovic made out of clay, and now we're like eating it out of a smoothie.
We should, you know, the wasteful things we do.
Yeah. Makes me think about the other stuff that we were doing before. It's like that we should maybe, you know.
Well, see, kale kind of went in reverse. They tricked people into thinking kale was food, and then everybody started eating it and making smoothies out, but kale is still parchment paper.
Yeah, not good. But it makes me think, like, paste, they said, don't eat the paste. Are we sure that paste is not a superfood?
Yeah, I mean, jury's still out on that in lots of kindergartens. That's
I did well in school. Like I said earlier, I got good grades. You think they stopped me eating the paste? No.
Do you find that dichotomy a lot in life, or you've experienced that, like where you can do well at the thing that everybody has placed all this meaning into, yet you're seeing the superficial meaninglessness of?
I'm not sure. Probably. You can't put a delicious bucket of paste in front of me and then just don't eat that.
Yeah.
You gotta have a little.
Right. And maybe it's something they didn't see.
Yeah. I'm gonna have a little. Yeah. I try to look at the box. I try to find the box so that I can find the door to get outside of the box. You know, and a lot of people are happy or not or whatever, but they're in the box and it's just is what it is. And I've been kind of kicking it, screaming, and tearing at the walls of the box ever since I knew that there was one. And this is mostly problematic, and people say that I need to talk to someone, and that's why I'm here today talking to you.
Well, see, there we go.
Yeah.
It's a multi-purpose. We can uncover the true value of chia seeds, the uselessness of kale, and what category anyone's thoughts may fall into at any given point.
And eat the paste.
Yeah.
Go to an elementary school right now, open the first door you see, and just start eating the glue.
It's there.
You can do that. You might get arrested or shot doing that these days, but like make an appointment and go to a school and eat their glue.
Yeah. It's got to be already in a school.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start doing the comedy thing, do you see that as like maybe the most efficient of all the kicking against the boxes that you've done because it's got this real-time automatic response?
It's very playful, and I like it because it's playful. But I don't necessarily feel like I'm like moving the needle on, like, I've been telling jokes about that Luigi guy and like trying to encourage more, you know, like I think Princess Peach is out there. I'm a feminist. I believe that women too can do the important work.
Right. There's no limitations. There's right. no rules.
And so I've been trying, but I haven't seen anyone like do it.
What kind of, do you,
they laugh at it.
Yeah. Do you think that, do you think when you say that kind of stuff to people, and I know you've had experience having these types of things, like you said in conversations, you say these kinds of things to people. Mm-hmm. Do you think now that you're doing it on stage, you're still, you can have the effect of making them laugh, but do you think that you have the affect of then making them think too?
I try a little. Depends on the day for me, right? And yeah, I mean, people have come up to me after like a comedy set. A lady did like last week. She came up to me and she said, "That really made me think about a lot of stuff." And, you know, I'm like, oh, I just talked about Santa's sack for 8 minutes. But, hey, you know, if you saw the light in that and are going to unravel your own inner mysteries based on me talking about, you know, who we should and should not kill or whatever, hey, great, cool. And I think being in that comfortable, vulnerable, I talk about transformation a lot. I think we talked about that. I also am really into surrender. And so like when somebody is at a comedy show and they're in the seat having their drinks or whatever, and they are able to become comfortable and vulnerable to the point where they're laughing at the things that even I am saying, then they have surrendered to the experience. And the more experiences that we can have that we allow ourselves to totally surrender to, the better. I talked about the patchwork quilt of one's life. The experiences that you are able to totally surrender are the best ones, for sure.
Why do you think we have such a problem doing that now?
Well, there's like fear. It's the more afraid you are, the less likely you are to surrender. And to an extent, right? Like,
yeah. Unless, of course, that's the name of the game.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. You know, war. But, yeah, I think there's a lot of fear and there's a lot of, like, life's hard. They've made it harder and harder for everyone. Back in 100 years ago, when I, you know, 3 lifetimes ago, I had some rough badges, 100 years ago, it was like, you know, you could do basically a dumb job and have like a tight life where if you do or do not sign, I feel like life is so hard now. You can make one bonehead decision and pretty much ruin your life. You have like 100 to 1,000 opportunities every single day to ruin your life, which is like, well, I better keep my head screwed on.
Yeah, right.
Because I don't want to do that. And so that certainly makes it harder to surrender.
Yeah, just that's just anxiety fuel.
Yeah.
Do you think that now the I don't want to say the rise of people doing stand-up comedy, but more...
There's a lot.
Yeah, but more the fringe things trying to bubble up is sort of the sign of we're collectively feeling our consciousness homogenization or our cultural flattening?
I wish I was that optimistic. I think that there's just a lot of stupid people with nothing better to do.
Point blank.
Yeah. I think that there's a lot of, like, brain-dead idiots that listen to podcasts and then have, like, become ambitious, you know?
What do you mean?
Well, ambition is infectious.
Ah.
And people can go wild with ambition, you know? Some people will, like, hear or see some kind of art or media or success somewhere, and they'd be like, well, I might be able to replicate a fraction of that if I really work really hard. And then other people will see the same thing and be like, I'm better than this guy.
Yeah.
I'm better than this guy, and the people will know tomorrow.
Yeah. Do you think that's delusion or arrogance or what?
Yeah.
Or all of the above?
Yeah, and all kinds of stupid.
The stupid isn't limited.
Yeah. Oh, no. No, I think we've proven that over and over again.
Yeah, that's funny you should, or ironic, I should say, you say that, because lately I've been diving into a bunch of videos that are actually delving into the societal impact of stupidity, like the stupid things we do en masse and how in aggregate they affect us all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little scary.
I believe that there are problems on the horizon. There will always be, so take comfort in that. But, you know, I think that there's risks associated with the obvious dumbing down of society, you know? And, you know, if I'm the smartest person in a room,
you're in the wrong room.
We're kind of in trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm in the wrong room.
And yeah, I was going to say, that's always what I say.
And I want to leave. And B, the rest of the people in that room after I leave it, oh, my God. how did they get here? They all drove there on the highway?
Yeah, that is one of the thoughts that gets me, too. It's like, damn, you people drove here.
Yeah, that freaks me out. It freaks me out. When I'm on the highway, it's like I'm listening to a car on the radio, and then I get to the places, and I start talking to the people. I'm like, oh, my God, you drove here, too? Like,
so you said you're not that optimistic, but I know, I think I feel better that you're not that pessimistic either. So where do you think your brand of realism or observation lands?
I think my next real move in my, like, I don't know if you call it a career or like a journey or whatever, but like, I think if everything is right and fair and just in the world, then I will be the next pope. And from there I can say what I want and really guide us home.
Do you think you got that kind of clout?
I'm hopefully the podcast, if y'all are listening and can help me out, because I don't have any contacts at the church.
I was going to say, I think we got some cardinals.
I'm hoping that you guys could put my name in the goblet of fire. I'm ready.
When that smoke burns white, it's you.
Yeah.
So then what will you do with your papacy when you get there? I mean,
play with myself every day.
Then you can make real music.
Yeah, we'll start a band probably. I would start a band if they made me the Pope.
Yeah, that seems fitting. Lots of...
And yeah, and like do live streams of like just like me putting on the cool robes and just saying unhinged stuff to the world, you know?
Well, if the Pope thing doesn't work, like if your name doesn't end up in the Goblet of Fire, what are you going to do?
Keep on kind of doing what I'm doing. I feel like... And I talked about change and transformation a lot. I don't know how much more I'm going to, like, fundamentally transform all my stuff. Probably, though, a little. I don't know. I'm sort of riding a bike between music and comedy. And really, like, for my mental health and enjoyment, my primary focus is on amusing myself and fulfilling the human part of me, you know? And that's really vague and sort of not very, like, I don't know if it's interesting to other people. Like,
well, I think that's what we're all doing to a degree, but it's different to be able to say to yourself that I'm doing that and then do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Instead of wait around for the time to present itself to do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to keep getting after stuff. Like, the world is, like, you know, do you want to hear a joke?
Of course I do.
United States government.
Oh.
Yeah, so like there's that.
You burnt.
There's that going on, and like there's all that, and there's like, oh, I don't know if the world's gonna be here next year, and it's like, yeah, I've always felt like that.
Yeah.
And so like I've always kind of lived as if like, all right, well, if we can do this today, let's, because like tomorrow, I don't know necessarily, and Aaron, you can expand that out, and so I'm just gonna keep getting after stuff. I'm gonna be doing, you know, more comedy as long as it is enjoyable to me, right? Like I could reach a point where the thrill is gone. Have you ever been with a lady?
I have.
Have you ever been with a lady for a while and then one day the thrill is gone?
I have.
Yeah. You get out of there, right?
Yeah, you do.
Someone does.
So yeah, someone does somehow.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, as long as the thrill's still there, I'm going to keep doing comedy cause it's like easy and fun. I'm going to keep doing music. I really want to go. I'm trying to get out to Easter Island to have a real in-depth conversation with, those Stoneheads.
The Moabs.
Yeah. I think that they have things to say and that I can hear rocks.
Yeah, I'm
just going to say a bunch of outlandish stuff on your podcast, and it's all true.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've done.
I am going to go. I'm going if anyone wants to go.
I was going to say, I'll go with. Yeah, I'm very much into the Moabs and the Easter Islands.
It's about as remote as you can go on Earth and still be on Earth.
And I don't think any of that stuff was an accident. And as a matter of fact, we're going to release our first field trip episode pretty soon here. We went to an artist we interviewed called Dean Laux, and at his house, he's got a Easter Island head in the yard. And I thought that was pretty awesome.
I really like to go and just feel. I think that like even just breathing in the air. Some I know that all the air on the earth is all the air on the earth, but like sometimes when I go somewhere and just land and then walk outside, it's like, whew. Oh, boy, I like that feeling. I like feeling things and being super duper far away with just like me and a couple thousand people and like a bunch of stone heads and like nothing illegal.
Ish.
Then I think it would be super fun.
Well, I thought I had one more thing I wanted to ask you before I get you out of here on something fun, but I actually got two things because that begs the question. Tell me about the Galapagos Islands thing. Was that?
Yeah, I mean, I like to get out of the country for Thanksgiving, not because I don't have anything against Native Americans, to be clear. I have issues with Thanksgiving, and I don't like what they did. You heard the story.
I have.
I don't like what went down at all, and I don't think that we should necessarily be like celebrating that every year. I think that if we want to have a day to be grateful, it should be every day. If anything, we should have one day to be, you know, not cool and not grateful for stuff. But yeah, so I try to get out of the country for Thanksgiving. There's so much in terms of like I crave novel experience too, and I have a bucket list of sorts of things that I want to do in my life, and Galapagos was like so cool because you can do so many things all in one place. There's cool critters everywhere. It's the only place in the world where within literally one day of your life you can swim with penguins, swim with iguanas, see the giant tortoises, swim with sharks. A lot of swimming. But
island, you
know, they got blue-footed boobies. I've been into boobies since Titanic, you know. And so to go and see the blue-footed ones, let's go. You know, and I just, yeah, it was thrilling. And I just, like, I didn't have a plan, but I knew that I wanted to film a lot. And I went out there and filmed a lot. And I came back and I was like, all right, I guess I should just, like, make a soundtrack and make this, like, a thing and put it out there like that. And now it's great because it's that's a thing that exists. You know, I watch it sometimes.
Is that the way you look at it? It's just, like, it's almost like a... Like your own personal, I don't want to say trophy case, but like patchwork wall, to use your word, of what you've made. Like now this exists and it's the Galapagos Islands thing I did and now I, next.
Yeah. And everything's interlinked. Like, you know, I went to Japan in November and I recorded a bunch of music before that and after that and not during, but a lot before and a lot after, and the stuff that I just put out feels to me like the sort of like Japan record, You know, it doesn't sound particularly Japanese or anything like that. But for me, it's like, this is the 6 months that I just had. You know, and I don't think I've answered a single one of your questions, like, straight on. And so I feel like I could maybe possibly get into, like, if I should run for Senate.
I mean, that is a valuable skill set to have. And, you know, I mean, if you don't answer my question straight on, it gives me another chance to ask something else.
Yeah.
Hey, curveballs are welcome and there's no rules. I'm not into rules, as you know. So my fun question I want to ask you, this is my setup for it. I know that you did, we were talking a bit before, I want to just backtrack a little bit to throw in events and what it takes when you're talking laser beam, sound systems, da-da-da-da-da-da, and you have to go through... or I should say you've had the experience of going through playing at bars, playing at establishments. You did your events called the pierogi raves.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the logistics of that, the ethos of that, and why it was important for you to do that. Because though I did not get to go because I don't drive, I thought it was super cool. And everything about it is kind of the antithesis of what everybody is accustomed to. So if you could tell me a little bit about that, then we'll get the fun one to get you out of here.
Yeah. So we talked about Rapper from the Future. We talked about the Sister Project. After that, I got a little twisted around myself and quit music for at least 3 or 4 days. Probably made a big announcement, as we do. And then I got really into illustrating, and I did a bunch of illustrations, and I had an art show. I had an art show with a bunch of illustrations, and I went to that art show that I did, and
you organized this?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was bored to death. Like, the idea of just, like, me putting a bunch of art on the walls and then being near, like, people kind of being around them was like, I want to, like, get a really, like, reaction out of people. This was pre-comedy.
No visceral there.
And so I was like, well, I'm not going to get my joy out of this, so I should probably get back into music. And so I recorded a bunch of new music, and I was like, I don't want to get back into music and do it blind, so I need to have a whole bunch of lasers, too. And I got a whole bunch of lasers and inflatable tube men and stuff. And I was like, And so I basically built a massive light show and music audio-visual experience thing, and then I started looking for venues to put on that show, and then the ship that I had built was bigger than most of the bottles that I had access to.
Mm.
So I got a little creative, and I remembered seeing a show at the Polish Society, which is like a pretty big room and pretty big high ceilings. I was like, I know I can do like a laser spectacle in here. And they're like, yeah, they were open to it as long as there was like some kind of beneficial to Ukraine element of it. And I was like, yeah, of course. I hate doing a show just to do a show. I love doing stuff for a cause. So I was like, all right, we'll do it for Ukraine. And then I knew that they served pierogies at that place. And I was like, we should, if we're going to do a rave, like, we should just market this as a pierogi rave because, like, I think that people will get it, you know? So if we just call it a pierogi rave and say, like, hey, lasers and pierogies, come dance and eat pierogies, and by the way, it's free, you know. And it was like, let's go, let's, like, that's what I want to do. Like, yeah, I just have a cool, that's a novel experience for everyone. It didn't cost anyone anything but their time. It cost me dearly. Dearly, so much. I could circumnavigate the globe for what it costed me. But I would do it again. You know, I like that. I can't do it every day. But yeah, maybe again someday.
That sort of the more fulfilling manifestation of the illustrations show then?
Oh, well, it's tough because you get into, like, you know, you got to get people there. And, you know, it's like, yes, I had fun. But ultimately, all of the work that goes into putting on a show like that, I've never gotten... It's like, is the juice worth the squeeze?
Right.
They ask. The squeeze is, and I'm not trying to whine on your show, but like the squeeze is astronomical. And sometimes the juice is like, I get like a little sippy sip.
Yeah, that's why I asked, because I think some people, you know, when you're on the outside of it, when you're putting on a show, you don't realize what the squeeze is.
Well, I'm like, and I live in a fantasy world. I you know, too, so I'll be like, all right, Perugirave, there'll be like basically just like 3,000 Hooters waitresses there, like to eat pierogies and shake my hand. And then I show up and it's like, that's not real.
Well, there's always tomorrow.
Yeah, and it's like 1.5 Wingstop waitresses. And it's like,
the math is way off.
You don't like half a lady?
Well, not with that amount of pierogies around.
Depends which half.
Yeah.
Right? Really, yeah. Depends which half.
And the amount of pierogies.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to need some help, and one of their halves is going to need something to do.
Yeah. I followed a half a lady on Instagram the other day. She's this half. Because I think if you're just, that's not a person.
No.
It's just legs.
Yeah. Well, that's a, I think you work for a magician then. You're the legs.
Yeah.
You know, that sucks when you're the legs, because then you have no chance in life. You can't. You know, you're pigeonholed right into it. You don't get to do comedy. You don't get to throw a rave. I mean, you're the legs.
We don't have time for me to give an impassioned speech about how supportive and proud I am of those ladies that have the blade legs.
Yeah.
The blade runners, you know?
Yeah. Because
That's someone who got knocked down. It would be easy for one to lose their legs and be like, I'm wheelchair now.
Yeah, I'm good.
I'm not going to run any more races. Some of these people, they lose their legs and they're like, no, give me the high-tech blades. I'm going to beat everyone.
I think that's pretty cool, though.
What a way to bounce back, literally.
See, and I'm waiting for that from my vision. And they're going to give me, like, RoboCop eyes. And then everything, every scene in my life is going to be like the movies from when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I mean, everybody gets to live their dreams. Some get to bounce and some get to see through walls.
I could see through walls into blade leg training facilities, I don't think I'd ever move. I shouldn't talk about this stuff.
Well, that's all right. I mean, the dangers of a sedentary lifestyle would catch up to you, though. You know?
Yeah.
There's not much runway in that one. So let's get you out of here on the fun one.
Okay.
You've been able to play shows as Rafe randomly coming up, throw the pierogi raves, do your stand-up comedy. You've been on all sides of the fence, sort of, or many sides of the fence, rather. If you could throw an event right now, what would you do? Would you do comedy? Would you do music? Would you do it all? Or would you bring something else together and you wouldn't even be on it?
For what purpose? Just my own personal...
Yep.
I'd like to have a wedding.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think it'd be cool to have a wedding.
Like Star Wars themed or something?
No, but not boring. Not one of the boring ones. Have you been to a boring wedding? Yeah,
oh,
not
yeah.
one of those. It'd be cooked up special. You know?
Like marrying more than two people?
Whoa. No, I don't think I'd probably not.
Would you perform the ceremony?
No, I'm talking about like, yeah, no, I wouldn't be allowed to, because I'd be in the wedding. I'd be marrying some lady.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So the event we're going to organize is your wedding.
Yes, but have it be, like, tremendous.
And are you picturing the lucky lady to be half or whole?
Half. I'm tired of these ladies with legs.
Yeah. A lot of bravado.
This kneecaps? Get your fucking kneecaps. Sorry, I swore for the first time. Get your kneecaps out of here.
It's bragging rights. I might have swore before you did. It's all fair in love and kneecaps, my friend.
Yeah, I'm tired of seeing everybody's kneecaps, and who needs legs, right? I've seen
not when there's blades. I mean, we've already been over this.
Yeah,
they're
crushing it on those things, and I understand there's woes associated with that too, but yeah, I think the future is mostly legless.
Yeah. Well, I think we've learned one thing. You can see life as a gift and a curse.
Yeah.
Simultaneously.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I didn't ask for this. You didn't ask for this, but like, we're making the best of it.
Amen to that. Yeah. Well, man, I can't thank you enough for coming down, dude. It's been a long time coming, like a long time coming.
It was a pleasure.
And I know your neck is going to be out of these woods soon, but when your neck is ever back in these woods, you always got a home here, and we're always going to stay up on what you're doing.
I'll come back when I'm the Pope.
Hell yes.
You'll get the Pope. I mean, you got that now, so.
Fuck yeah.
That's exclusive. You got the Pope.
I'm in. And if the Pope needs any backup dancers, singers, coordinators, I'm in.
Hell yeah.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
Yeah.